Good morning. And welcome in to the Blitz live here on this Tuesday. Charlie Collier, Andy Brock to my left. Sam Beard back behind the board. Is it even really a good morning?
No.
No.
No chance.
No, it's not a good morning.
Not for y'all.
Yeah, you seem
I'm fine. I'm doing fine.
You're having a fine morning, Andy. It seems
I am
like.
Having a fine morning. I've got no complaints.
How are you? So everything going good for you all around?
Yeah, this is just like a typical Tuesday. I got to watch two Monday night football games. It was kind of one of those nights where I kind of gave a glance at the TV here and there, but two of them on. I think we should do that every Monday. Why not? I liked having two Monday night football games. It was weird that it happened in week two. In the past, we had gotten in week one. So
I think they're doing
it's
it a
nice.
Couple times this year, I think.
I liked
I think
it.
It's like a new thing.
I got to watch two games, even though they were both blowouts.
I didn't like it.
They were two good
I
games.
I didn't like that. That means you're stuck with Steve Levy again. There's no one in America is worse at their job than Steve Levy.
I don't know about I don't mind Steve Levy. I think he does a good job.
You're absurd. You're absurd, Andy. The fact. Have you ever said a bad thing about a person in the existence of humanity?
Maybe not about Steve Levy. I don't know. He hasn't done anything to me.
He's so bad.
I don't know what he's done to you.
He's bad. He's so unbearably bad at his job. It drives me crazy. Also, they just kept, like, going double box with Eagles-Vikings.
They did, yes. They got to promote their other.
If I want to watch it, I'll watch it. It's on TV. I know how to find ABC.
They've got to promote the other game.
I'm choosing to watch this one on purpose.
I did like it because like when I was watching the Titans game, I was like, well, I wonder what's going on in the Eagles game as like a non-fan of either of these teams.
That was so
So bad. It was nice. It was like, oh, they're giving me a good red zone. It was like red zone. They were like giving me a look at what the Eagles were doing when they were at the five. It was cool.
Yeah, the only thing worse than watching your team get dismantled on Monday Night Football is straining to watch your team get dismantled on Monday Night Football while you're reminded of the receiver you traded away as winning.
At least he didn't score a touchdown. But he does seem a lot happier.
We'll see how happy they are with him come week nine when he's missed two games with a hamstring injury and dropped seven passes.
Mm.
Yeah.
So good, though.
They talk about how his mental health is bad and he's had all those issues.
It seems like he just needed to get out of town.
Dangerous
seems like he
combination
just needed...
if you're a Philly receiver.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm legitimately worried for him.
Jalen Reagor probably could tell
I'm
you.
I'm worried for him and his mental health as soon as things start to go any kind of bad at all there.
They looked really good, though. Eagles looked really good.
They did.
On all fronts.
I thought the Vikings had a bad game plan.
Vikings played bad. I agree with you.
Wasn't their best showing. I didn't even watch the game. I just turned it off after that, after that second half.
Yeah, how are you, Sam? You bad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't even comprehend that loss last night. I was sitting there on my couch, start of the second half there. I was feeling all right. Like, oh, 10-point game, like we could get things rolling, and then we got steamrolled. We couldn't get it rolling, we got steamrolled. It was like it was a undescribable half of football that you just sit back after the game goes final and you just have no idea what to even think.
The 24-0 third quarter really stung.
Really, really stung.
Really stung. I felt good at halftime. I was like, man, it's 17-7, and really you're a properly called interception away or Ben Jones' face, hands to the face away from leading at halftime, but I thought you were playing some pretty decent football. You got him in some third downs. You even got him into some fourth downs, and I thought that the second half you were going to come out, score a touchdown on that opening drive, and we were going to get a really fun second half of football, and then I just don't know what happened.
Yeah, I felt like I was watching the 2-15 Titans all over again, or 2-14 Titans.
It was so uncharacteristic, like the mistakes that they were making of a Vrabel-coached football team. Like, I think they just kind of, they just let the crowd and the wave of just the Buffalo Bills, they just let that take them over there in that third quarter. As soon as they lost it there, they didn't try to get it back. They just let it crumble, and they let it get embarrassing. And that was, I think, the worst part, is because, like, you're not as bad as a team that's getting beat 41-7 by the by the Bills. Like, that's not
– I hope not.
The Titans are not a team that's bad, but that is that bad. But,
you maybe.
Know, they squandered some early opportunities, and then, again, they just kind of gave up, I think.
I think the good news is that this is going to happen to a lot of teams that play the Bills. I mean, the Bills looked every bit as good as the Titans looked every bit as bad. So I think it was just
two different nights, completely. It was just one of those things, too. I think the Bills had some Titans demons they wanted to exercise, and you know they had the opportunity to do that on Monday Night Football with extended rest and all the buzz in the world, all the energy in the world from that crowd. It was the first home game since a mass shooting, too. That definitely gives you, like, extra vibes, I think, towards a win. Kind of unfair, really, that the Titans have had to play the Giants on 9/11 and then the Bills in their first home game after mass shooting, but oh well. I don't know. I think if anything's clear this morning, though, it's that it's going to be a Bills-Giants Super Bowl, and you know, the rest of the games don't even matter.
Yeah.
I think that why even play any more games? Can we just fast forward to the part where the 19-0 Bills play the 19-0 Giants? Because clearly that's the direction that we're headed.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
We'll really figure out when the Giants play the Cowboys next week where things stand.
Be careful.
They're a strong team, aren't they?
Yeah.
That tight win against the Panthers, that's a statement win.
2-0.
2-0. They're 2-0.
They're 2-0.
They are.
Things are, like, very good in New York right now.
Yep. Their team combined, the MetLife Stadium teams are 3-1 right now.
They're 3-1. And
when have we been able to say that?
The Yankees are both winning their division in mid-September. Their WNBA team was in the semifinals, I think. Maybe.
I think on Sunday I heard something that, like, the Mets, Yankees, Jets and Giants like all won on the same
all
day
500
for the first
and
time in like 40 years or something like that.
Wow.
I mean, something absurd.
Well, it's also crazy that they just have four teams in two leagues to be able to to deal with that. It's going to be almost impossible for them all to win at the same time.
That it's up.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not okay. I'm broken.
You definitely seem a little...
I
want to get your true breakdown of just everything instead of like a sense of like, you know, it was good.
So
and then
I think
it was
you
bad.
Started off right. I thought you were playing toe to toe with them early. I mean, you know, you had a great scripted drive to go score right in their mouth to quiet the crowd and to kind of punch back after they scored on that opening drive. Then, you know, you get the turnover on downs, and all of a sudden you got some juice on your sidelines, and I think that you were about to reel off another – you were in the process of reeling off another drive, you know, another drive that kind of looked like that first one, and things were going really well, and then you run a little wide receiver screen to Robert Woods, perfect play call, and then, you know, Ben Jones again – just gets a little piece of Matt Milano's face mask to negate what was like a 17-yard gain. And you were just significantly behind the chains. Had to punt. Whatever. That's fine. The Bills get the ball back. You know, they go down and score. I think but they do it on like a 4th-and-1. Again, you're right there. Like you're fighting your tails off. I think that there were some interesting decisions being like, why was undrafted, you know, free agent Trey Avery from Rutgers playing man coverage on Stephon Diggs as much as he was? I don't know. And if you're going to play man, why would we're playing soft man? Like, you have to, if you're going to play man against the Bills, you're just going to have to press. You're going to have to just press and either get beat or not get beat. But if you play soft man, then you're just done for because he'll just dot you up. So I thought that was interesting. But, you know, you get him into a 4th down, and they're able to pick up a 4th-and-1, and it was just Josh Allen being special. You know, that was part of it. Thought Amani Hooker had an interception.
No, he did. It wasn't a thought.
Before.
He had an interception.
I mean.
Is that the one right on the edge of the end zone?
Yeah.
Yeah, like
I need to take a better look at that because
I've never seen such a clear interception that never got reviewed. Like it was a clear toe tap.
And there's the second foot down.
Well, where's the other foot's high up in the air?
Yeah, the other foot had like very clearly hit before that.
Well, we need to see this. Well, I mean, if that had happened, y'all would have lost 34-7. So
I mean, it just changes the way the games unfold, though.
Yeah, I mean,
like it's just completely different. Like games just completely different.
That was a massive momentum killer for us. I feel like we did not play the same game after that happened.
But then you come back the next drive, and like I thought, still you started off nice. You came back well. You had a first down run of 6 yards. You got him into second and four. And I thought that you were going to start to do more of the same. And then you ran a pitch play to the left, and Jeff Swaim and whatever Daryl Daly swing tackle you got from the Panthers, you know, both of those guys just completely whiffed on blocks. Derrick Henry gets blown up, and all of a sudden it's 3rd and 10. And then once it's 3rd and 10, you're behind the chains. You know, you don't pick up the first down. It's not Ryan Tannehill's wheelhouse, 3rd and 10s, and then from there, you know, the Bills get the ball back at 17-7, and it's just – that's game. You know, that's when you kind of just let it slip away. And I think that the Titans are a much better team than losing 41-7. But I think in those two drives, just the complete lack of execution from Swaim and your backup left tackle to let a second and four turn into a 3rd and 10 – and the one grab of the face mask by Ben Jones completely changed this game for the Titans offense. Just from that point, they never got into a rhythm, and then they were just pressing. And the defense was on the field too much. They just couldn't, you know, stop the Bills anymore. The Titans offense was pressing. Ryan Tannehill was trying to do too much. And if a couple of those plays go differently early, I think you're looking at a game that unfolds in a much different manner and is a lot closer.
Mm. I hate it for y'all because I feel like you guys are just – you have no energy today, and I feel bad.
I'm worried about it was the future of this team.
Primetime
because I don't
display.
Trust Todd Downing at all.
You had your nice little dips and nachos Downing. Last night, and Josh Allen just threw them all away.
I don't trust Todd Downing at this point. I'm confused by some of the defensive game planning. I thought we blitzed a lot last night, which – you know, we shouldn't have to change things up too much, like schematically too much. If Harold Landry's out, just plug in and keep the same thing going, because then you were blitzing so much, you had to play off man, and then you were playing off man, so then Josh Allen's dotting you up. Blitz less, blitz four, put more in coverage, and trust the interior to collapse that pocket, and your edge guys can just hold an edge. And that was just frustrating. I thought that was strange. I think you're not really holding up in the run game without Harold Landry. I think that was a really underrated aspect of his game, the way that he can kind of set an edge and be that force player. Danico Autry's not been able to do that. Bud Dupree getting hurt early. Taylor Lewan got carted off early. Steve Levy didn't even – yeah, that's another thing. The Titans' best pass rusher got hurt. Steve Levy didn't mention it.
Well, that's just a whole – I mean, everyone involved on the TV crew – That's not just Steve Levy.
Yeah, but it starts with Steve Levy.
Sure.
Yeah, but we're just going to blame it on Steve Levy.
Yeah, I mean, you can put it all on Steve, but there's like 20-plus people on that game.
Like, you think you'd notice, like, oh, hey, I prepared for Bud Dupree to be in the game. I haven't seen him in, you know, three quarters. Maybe he's hurt. Maybe I should check
Or
Lovsky
and Reddick didn't say anything.
No. Orlovsky's not good either.
Orlovsky had his little...
I like Reddick.
He did that little brain fart in the middle of his open. Did you see that?
No, I missed it.
That was awesome.
What happened?
He like clearly messed up his phrasing on something. Like he couldn't get a word out. He paused for like 3 seconds, just went like right over the air, and then paused for another 3 seconds, and then went right back into it. It was just a little bit awkward. But hey, he's like every one of us.
I appreciate
They're human
that.
Too. I do appreciate that.
Oh, man.
You sound like someone who is in complete shock still and is just talking. Just talking.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it's just like a different word every 5 seconds. You know, doesn't make sense, sure, but it just sounds like someone who's in shock, just sputtering.
I am.
It really sounds like it's just like there's so much you can say about that game. Obviously, I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it more. I want to know, though, like, and we could talk about this later, how concerned truly are you? Because I last night, a lot of your tweets, you seemed, you know, still optimistic despite this loss, but today feels like more of a somber mood, maybe.
The Titans' problems are not what I thought their problems would be. The Titans' problems right now is that, you know, are Derrick Henry not running the ball well. I think he looks kind of stiff in the offensive line, not blocking all that well in front of him. I didn't think that would be a problem.
I do think the Bills' defense, though, is a good defense in your offensive line to not help him out.
Yeah,
and that
but
was
even
the main
against
thing.
Good defenses, like, it hasn't mattered in the past, and maybe part of it is because, you know, there's not the threat of A.J. Brown that makes it even harder to run the ball. Yeah. And part of it maybe is the receivers, like, making it harder to run the ball. Yeah. But I think the passing offense through two games is where is more than fine. I'm happy with where the passing offense has been.
I think Tannehill looked fine in some situations, not when he threw the interception. But I feel like he had a couple of good throws. There's nothing really to go crazy about. But, I mean, yeah, there's not a true receiver one on your team yet. Treylon Burks has to make that step.
Then, like, defensively, your defensive line is struggling way more than I anticipated, especially, again, against the run. That front seven should be better. Caleb Farley was disappointing last night, too. That was upsetting.
Yeah, I was seeing a lot of people saying that they're already calling him a bust.
No, I don't think that's fair, obviously. I mean, I think that that's a step too far. You know, he's making...
Overreaction?
He's making... That was his third career, like,
yeah,
game start.
Still early, like, to tell.
Yeah, you can't do that to a guy. But
are you concerned that week one was you couldn't stop Saquon, and now week two it's you couldn't stop Stephon Diggs in the pass game? It's two different things?
No, because I think that a lot of people would have issues stopping Stephon Diggs, and a lot of people have and will have issues stopping Stephon Diggs. Jalen Ramsey had issues stopping Stephon Diggs, so that doesn't really worry me. It's just that is what it is. You know, the Bills are very, very good for a reason, and – you know, what doesn't worry me is Mike Vrabel, his MO. But you're doing some very, very non-Mike Vrabel things. What doesn't worry me is, you know, the defensive talent that you have with Byard and Simmons and, you know, some of the other pieces on that front. But what does worry me is that Bud Dupree's hurt and you know, the linebacker duo of Zach Cunningham and David Long has been way worse than they are supposed to be. You know, offensively, I'm not worried, but I'm worried with Todd Downing there. Like, Todd Downing is awful. I mean, truly is. He doesn't really do a good job of adjusting in games and reacting to what he's seeing. Once you get off that scripted drive sometimes, he's just been bad.
And it's not Todd Downing who is helping with the scripted plays.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
100% Tim Kelly, because I'm looking at some tweets right now here. We've gone 2-for-2 on scripted drives this year, and last year without Todd Kelly, Todd Downing went he scored 17 points in 18 games on scripted drives. So the guy just can't adapt to, like, what is happening in a game. That is just my biggest concern with Downing.
Yeah, I just don't think you can get anywhere without firing Todd Downing as your offensive coordinator.
And Vrabel is too stubborn to fire someone midseason.
So I feel like that's why Tim Kelly's there, is like, hey, if things don't go well, you can make the move away from Todd Downing.
You would think.
So that's frustrating. At the end of the day, though, there's still obviously 15 more games. You've won a lot of games over the past couple of years. You've been doing something right. You can continue to do something right. And when you look around, the Colts are 0-1-1. And they've just played the Texans and Jags. You've played a tougher schedule. You know, the Jags are 1-1, and the Texans are 0-1-1.
Oh, it's the worst division
so,
of football.
You know, you have
three winless teams.
Despite, you know, a terrible start out of the gate, you haven't been set back at all because by your division. You're still, I mean, you could still, you know, be in a share of first place yeah. by the time you go to bed Sunday night.
At this point, though, do you feel like it's win the division or bust at this point? Do you think a wild card? Obviously, you're still in a wild card.
It was always win the division or
bust. I know, but like, it feels like the wild card.
Do you compile a record good enough to acquire a wild card? Yeah, I do.
Obviously, if you win out, you can, but it just feels like at this point, the division is your best chance.
Nah, I do. I mean, I think that you were still – like, this – again, last night, you know, there are, like, two plays in the first half, three plays. If they go differently, we're talking about, you know, like a seven-point loss to the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football, and, hey, you got some things to build on. You know, that's it could have just been that different. But it wasn't, and you had to watch it, and you had to suffer through 41-7. Is it just kept piling on?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of that day, even if one thing went your way, it just wasn't your night on all three aspects. I mean, offense, defense, and special teams. Muffing punts, Kyle Phillips not getting the job done, Hooker muffed a punt, Robert Woods finally was able to field one. It felt like all three phases were just very sloppy. So, I mean, that obviously a recipe like that, it's not going to win you any games.
Yeah, I just don't know where you go from here. I guess that's my my biggest concern is, yeah, excuse me, I don't really know where you go. Like, I don't know. Can you just go back on Sunday against Las Vegas and pretend this never happened and go back to running the same stuff and just executing it and winning? And then it's just okay?
Talk about a big game. Titans and Raiders, who would have expected both these teams to be 0-2 at this point, playing each other week 3, someone's got to be 0-3.
Isn't that like the stat, too? Like, once you start 0-3, the playoffs get really
hard. Oh, once you start 0-2, 11% chance since 1990. Only 11% of teams start 0-2.
I think that was former playoff teams.
Well, since 1990, teams that start 0-2, only 11% of them make the playoffs.
Are you sure that wasn't, like what Sam was saying, like specifically former playoff teams?
No, I mean, it's like for teams that start 0-2, only 11% of them since 1990 have gone on to then make the playoffs. So it's like, it's not impossible, but it's like very few go on and still turn around and make the playoffs.
I feel pretty confident the Titans will be one of them.
Yeah, with how bad your division is, like this, that's not...
I feel confident. I think that the Titans are still a good football team. I think. I mean, I think.
Like, I haven't seen it this year, but they should
they
still
really
have the pieces.
They haven't put it together, but like, I think when you look at like Mike Vrabel, when you look at an offensive line that is okay-ish, when you look at
Derrick Henry, how long like, is Taylor Lewan out? Have we had any indication on that?
I've heard nothing about Bud Dupree or Taylor Lewan. I
don't really want to hear anything about Taylor Lewan.
I don't either. I just think it's just going to be bad.
We're just kind of stuck. You know, we got players on big contracts not playing well, and we don't have we just got a lot of young people on offense that we got to get going. No, I mean, it's just not happening.
Yeah, for people that are saying
the
window, there are people out there that are like, oh, the window's closing. Oh, the window's closed. Oh, you know, you wasted a window. Oh, what are you doing to, you know, to help whatever, you know, extend it? You did that this offseason. You know, you made moves this offseason to try to rebuild that offense while also staying competitive with that offense. You know, you got a future tackle, you got a future running back, you got a future wide receiver one, and you got a future quarterback.
Yeah, but that's future. That you're not winning now, though. Like, Treylon Burks is going to be a good receiver, but does he get this year?
I'm talking that was about the window getting extended. Like, people were like, oh, the window's shut closed, and you've done nothing about it. No,
the window's still
open. You've done something about it. You went this offseason and tried to get your tight end of the future, your tackle of the future, your running back of the future, your quarterback of the future, and your wide receiver one of the
future.
Who's
the tight end of the future?
Chigga Nwankwo.
Okay.
Like, you tried to get all five of those things this offseason while kind of resetting the cap a little bit on that side of the ball, too. So, yeah, no, you made the moves to try to extend your future, and I think that even if this year goes poorly, like that future is still competitive because of the defense that you have in place. It's pretty young and going to be there for a while, and then the offense that you've hopefully tried to, you know, rebuild the last offseason. But I don't know. You got to get – for this season, you need Taylor Lewan back. You need to get Bud Dupree back. You need to get Christian Fulton back. And you need to get your head out of your ass. And I think you probably need to find a way to fire Todd Downing, but I don't think you're going to do that. So you need to find a way to win in spite of Todd Downing. And, again, I don't know. I have a lot more questions than there are answers right now. But it's a tough Tuesday morning.
Somber.
It's a tough Tuesday morning. But we'll move on from the Titans talk. Tennessee, Florida, try to get ourselves in check and pick the energy up in here as we look towards Saturday. Stay with us here on the Blitz. Back here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Trying to do a little mental reset now after a depressing start to this Tuesday. Want to let you know, though, ditch the beer belly bloat this football season and cheer on the Big Orange with White Claw Hard Seltzer. Crafted with quality ingredients, White Claw Hard Seltzer is made from a blend of seltzer water, a gluten-free alcohol base, and just a hint of fruit flavor. 100 calories, 1 gram of sugar, 5% alcohol. It's available in many deliciously refreshing flavors. Please make sure to drink responsibly. So, Tennessee, Florida this weekend. Again, college game day, Checker Nealon. By the way, you a Checker Nealon guy, Andy? Forgot to ask you.
Yeah, I love Checker Nealon.
Okay, cool.
I mean, it looks awesome.
Felt like I had heard that you were not a Checker Nealon guy.
Why?
No, I don't know. I just felt like someone
just
told me.
You felt like that was just a...
I felt like I'd heard that as
well. Okay. No, I have no complaints of Checker Nealon. I love it. Like, it looks great. I think we should do it once every year, and I feel like, you know, we have done it. I don't know how many times this has been since the first time it happened. What was the first time against Florida in, like, 2014?
Yeah,
it was a ranked game against Florida first time. Then it happened against Oklahoma. Florida again in 2016. I believe it's happened with Georgia before. Ole Miss last year. I think it looks great. I mean, I love it. And I think it helps, you know, bring out the scenes of Nealon even more. I think the pitchers with Nealon checkerboarded is some of the best stadium, you know, pitchers of all time. So I love it. And I think it looks really good for recruits when they come in and see that. It kind of adds to the atmosphere a little bit, too, because, I mean, wherever you are in the stadium, you're going to see a full checkerboard around you.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's amazing. I think it adds a little extra juice.
Yeah.
I'm all for it at all times. But looking at this game, at this matchup, you know, you've had some coaches start to talk and everything. And, you know, we're going to cut trouble. You know, we're going to continue to build to it all weekend. But I was thinking about this last night. And I'd love to get your thoughts. I think it might be time to make some changes, special teams-wise. I think that if there's one area that you could really... No, instead of just nitpicking like we've done in other areas, if you actually can just be critical, I think maybe it would be special teams. I think that, you know, Ball State almost blocked a punt.
Yeah.
Pitt did block a punt. Akron almost blocked a punt. I think that, you know, you've had a muff punt against... Pitt. You had an instance in Saturday's game where Trayvon Flowers, you know, showed the fair catch signal, but then ran after he caught it as if he was returning it either way. So that should have been a delay of game penalty. You got away with a penalty that time that, you know, should have been called. I think that the special teams is an area that you expected to be better in, this year it hasn't. Like, you had a punt that you could have downed on the one that you let go into the end zone. Punts just seem to be getting off kind of slow right now. I don't know. I just it hasn't been very crisp. And I thought – I expected that to be an area where Tennessee can maybe – you know, take advantage of, well, of other teams.
I agree with the veteran in Paxton Brooks, and that punt coverage team should be a lot better. I mean, there's a couple of missed blocks there that obviously caused that block against Pittsburgh, stuff like that. Obviously, yeah, you need to clean that up. Get in more of a rhythm, because when you do have an experienced punter like that, it should be to your advantage, especially in really tight games that are upcoming against really good SEC opponents. You want to be able to accurately flip the field and keep momentum for your offense and defense. If you can't do that, then you're going to be in trouble in the SEC. So, yeah, I mean, there definitely needs to be more of an emphasis on, hey, we can't miss this block. We can't miss this assignment on this punt coverage team. When the ball flies down the field, go down there and get it. Yeah, I mean, those are obviously things, I guess, so you can, like, clean up. I don't know if there's, like, necessarily, like, any drastic overhauls you can make. Maybe get new guys in there. If I can't really point out anyone specific who's missed anything that I've been able to see with my own eyes, but I feel like those are things that hopefully you expect to be cleaned up by this week with Florida, that you expect to be more sharper in terms of like reception of the punts. You know, Trayvon Flowers, he muffed that one. Having guys back there, I feel like that's something we knew was going to be a work in progress coming into the season, because you don't have Velus Jones Jr. That's a guy that is incredibly hard to replace, the way he impacted the game, you know, obviously just taking his receiver aspect out of it, but the way he returned kickoffs and punts and the way he did it so effectively and was one of the best return men, not just in the SEC, but maybe the nation as well. He did that throughout his entire career. That's not easy just to replace in your first 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to replace. Like, I don't expect you to just be able to roll someone else back out there and have that same threat to be explosive like you were with Velus Jones Jr., but I don't think it's a lot to ask for to properly field punts. Like, that should not be a hard thing to roll out and replace from a year-to-year basis.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So, like, what I'm saying, I think it's time to move on from Trayvon Flowers. I think when you – you know, I think he's an excellent safety, and he can go be an excellent safety, but I just don't think he needs to be your punt returner anymore. When I imagine the decision-making was like when you decided to put Trayvon Flowers back there, you just decided, you know what, hey, we tried this, we tried that. You know, maybe there's some issues with like a squirrel wide or someone else more explosive. Maybe it's D. Williams. Because D. Williams, I think, probably would have been your starting punt returner if he wasn't injured. But, you know, I think instead you're just like, let's just put the safe choice back there with Trayvon Flowers. Let's just put a guy back there that, you know, is experienced, that we trust, that we can trust to just field punts, you know, take some fair catches and not do anything dumb. But your safety plan hasn't been so safe. You've had, again, in 3 weeks, you've had a muff punt and you've had a penalty that was not called that should have been called. You know, you shouldn't – like, you should have, like, one muffed punt a year. You know, like, one crucial mistake a year, and he's already made two.
Yeah, well, then throw D. Williams out
there. So I think that, yeah, I would like to see like a Squirrel White or like a D. Williams if he gets back healthy in time to go back there. Like, if, you know, if your safe choice hasn't been safe, then you might as well try to get something explosive instead.
Yeah.
I guess really that's kind of what I get back to.
Yeah. I mean, you want a guy first and foremost who's going to catch the ball before you want them to try to get 10 yards on the punt. Anything after catching the ball is an added bonus that, of course, you'll take if someone can give that to you. So I think, yeah, if they made that change, then I don't think there's anyone's going to obviously be an uproar, or anyone's obviously going to feel confident at the moment with whoever's back there until you see someone take that step. And we haven't seen that yet from Trayvon Flowers. Obviously, those few mistakes. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like that is something they could change, and I don't think anyone's going to be too upset about that. I mean, no matter who they throw back there, we haven't seen D. Williams yet. It's just been Trayvon, correct?
Yeah, well, we saw Squirrel White.
Okay.
Yeah, we saw Squirrel White actually almost break free on one there in the second half, and you know, that's kind of like what I don't know.
How different will it be, though, against the Florida?
Right, and like, do you want to put a guy back there that, like, maybe you don't trust as much in the basic aspects of fielding punts? Like, hey, you know, you need to come up and fair catch this one. Don't let it bounce. Or, hey, don't backtrack to kind of try to get to this ball. Like, keep your heels here, and if it's over your head, like, let it go. Like, all those things. I think that's why you had Trayvon Flowers back there.
And I get Trayvon made a mistake, and he muffed that one against Pittsburgh, and we've seen him make another mistake. But at the end of the day, against the Florida, I would rather prefer that veteranship over a freshman who's still, you know, they haven't gotten a start yet.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's not Squirrel White. Maybe it is, again, D. Williams if he's healthy enough to return punts. But I don't know. I just think that that's an area really all around, a phase of the game that could, you know, use some work, use some improvement. Sam, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of here with Andy on this one. Like, you know, you'd like to get somebody else back there, but like in such a big game, like you kind of want to go with someone who's got a little bit more experience there. I thought Squirrel White looked good though. And I mean, that kid's got wheels, so it'd be a good option to go put back there. But like, I don't know. I feel like if you wanted a different punt returner, you would have been trying some things out in the first three games of the year against Ball State and Akron to start things off a little bit, instead of like wanting to turn into something else here now that we're hitting Florida and the SEC schedule. I feel like that's a little risky.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you look at Squirrel White and you say this guy probably has a better chance of returning a punt than Trayvon Flowers. But at the end of the day, if we don't return a punt all season long and then the rest of the way we just don't muff one, then that's fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine with me too. Again, I just either find a better, safer option than Trayvon Flowers or move away from the safe option if he's not going to be that safe option. Hey, yesterday, some coaches spoke with the media, and one of the quotes I think that's kind of getting tossed around came from Billy Napier on Anthony Richardson, you know, his first road start being at Tennessee.
Quote, oh, it's his first career road start.
Yeah, first SEC.
Okay, but he played significantly in that LSU game, did he not, last year?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Well, he said, quote, "It's not like we're going to Canada and they're going to change the rules. It's going to be the same game. It's just going to be a little louder and played at a different location." I think some Tennessee fans were kind of in a little bit of an uproar over that. You know, hey, what do you mean? It's not going to be... You know, it's just going to be a little louder and played at a different location. Like, Tennessee, the crowd could have a major effect on this game.
Yeah.
Will have a major impact.
What do you want him to say, though?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, that's what I come back to.
Well, what's he going to say?
Yeah. Oh,
this is going to be awful.
It's going to be terrible. We're
they're
going to
make him crazy uncomfortable.
We're very scared. Yeah, he's shaking. I think that Andy Richardson just can't handle this.
No, he's not ready. He's not ready yet.
You know, we as a team, we're just...
We're not prepared.
We're dreading this fully. So, like, I think that's one of those where it's like...
He's Florida's coach. Yeah. He's not going to cater to Neyland Stadium and the Tennessee fans. He's going to cater to his quarterback.
I think
even
that...
Even if he struggles, he'll say the same thing. You know? He's not going to...
But how big of an impact do you think the crowd can have this weekend?
Oh, I mean, it can have an incredible impact. I mean, we've seen what Neyland can do to opposing teams. I mean, you think back to that 2016 Florida game when Appleby, the backup for Florida, came in, and you know he looked good in some instances, but second half, man, that the crowd got into it, momentum shifted. If Tennessee grabs a hold of momentum on Saturday, the crowd is not going to give Anthony Richardson in Florida, you know, a single playoff. Like it's going to be loud, and I feel like knowing how big that crowd was last week against the non-conference Akron team, where you won by over 50 points, it's going to be four quarters of intensity after game day. After all this build-up, you're 3-0, looking to be 4-0, potentially jumping into the top 10. It's going to be a fan base that have been waiting for a game like this for over 6 years. They're going to be unrelenting.
I think that the crowd could work both ways, though. I think that there's going to be a certain level of tension and anxiousness among our fans, obviously.
True.
Given the history between Tennessee and Florida, where if Florida gets off to a fast start, or if Tennessee, like, you know, if they struggle out of the gate a little bit, if there's just, you know, some like a three and out or some punts, and say it's low scoring towards the end of the first quarter and things aren't going great, there's going to be apprehension. And I think you're going to be able to feel that in the crowd. You know, I think you're going to be able to sense that from the crowd, the apprehension, the puckering of the cheeks. Like, I think that, you know, you're just going to – that could play a factor where it adds a little bit of pressure, where it tightens things up a little bit. But at the same time, like you said, I mean, if you can see a crowd just kind of create like a wave of energy, a wave of momentum, and if Tennessee gets off to a hot start, that could, I mean, you get the crowd behind you, you get that momentum, that wave. I mean, it could be like Buffalo last night, again, where it's just like a crowd and an offense are all just kind of clicking at once, and it's just you drown in like a tsunami.
Yeah. I mean, the important thing to remember, fast start or not, this team has been equipped in several different situations at this point, a team that is used to being out in front and a team that has been down before. I mean, it wasn't your best start against Pittsburgh, and you still found a way, and you still won that game. So I feel like even if it's not the start you're hoping for on Saturday, this team hasn't shown any indications that they're just going to lay down and die. So I think even if it's not 17-0 at the end of the first quarter, even 10-0 at the end of the first quarter, Florida gets an early drive, Florida still has pieces on offense to be really effective in this game. They haven't shown them a lot in the last 2 weeks, but they've got a good team. It's going to be competitive, I feel. I think if, Nealon tries to, I don't know, obviously it's hard to say stay positive the whole game because there's going to be things that you're going to be frustrated about, but just know, I mean, this has been a competitive series. It's, in my mind, going to be a close game.
Well, hey, if you have any thoughts, if you want to, let your voice be heard, the Big Orange Philly phone lines are open. 865-546-8200. That's your number to call in. Big Orange Philly, 6625 Manorville Pike in Halls. It's a great spot for a quick lunch, burgers and beers with friends after work, or a weekend out with the boys, a little pool, darts, karaoke, some live music, all that and more. Big Orange Phillies. And if you can't make it over today, well, you can deliver. You can order via Grubhub. They'll deliver to you. You can check out the menu at BigOrangePhillies.com. Man, we love Big Orange Phillies. Sam, send us a break. We'll wrap up the hour on the other side. I thumb away from L.A. back to Knoxville. It's Florida week, Sam.
It is.
You can just keep the volume up. It's time to play. It's time for your Florida Man of the Day.
What's up in Florida today, Charlie?
Everyone from Florida is dumb. I might not be the brightest guy, but next to them my IQ's high. If they had guitars, here's how they'd strum.
Well, Andy, let's take things down to St. Petersburg, Florida, where a man was charged with criminal mischief in a Target and was freed on a $150 bond. The man, Cody Christopher Meter, again, arrested in Target. Andy, any guesses for what criminal mischief he might have committed in this Target?
I have no guesses.
Not one?
Maybe he stole something, Charlie.
Sam, any guesses on what kind of mischief that he could criminally get into in a Target in St. Petersburg, Florida?
Tell me.
No guess? Nothing at all?
He broke something.
He got a little hot and heavy with one of the Frozen toys, cops said. Again, Cody Christopher Meter allegedly fornicated with one of the popular Disney flick stuffed animals, the stuffed snowman from Frozen, Olaf. He finished too before putting it back on the shelf. When he was done, apparently he moved over to a large stuffed unicorn and then became dry humping that as well before he was arrested. He said he admitted, he did some, quote, stupid stuff in there. And he also said one other thing that he did.
It's the understatement of the year.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, man. I just did some really stupid stuff in there.
That's not a stupid decision.
The toys were removed from the store floor, according to the.
I'm glad.
They didn't even make them buy it?
Police department. they didn't make them buy it?
It's about as bad as it gets.
His father also said, he has a history of doing stuff like
what?
This.
What? Well, he got his father in on this interview. Well, they did like a little sit-down interview after this incident.
He looks about exactly what you'd expect him to look like.
Man.
Man, if you get like...
I don't know if anyone can be expected to look any like way after that. Like, that's just a unique person.
I think I have a very clear picture for someone that fornicates with an Olaf doll and a Target.
No, that's just different.
It's just Florida.
Ah, man.
Just Florida. Just another day in America's armpit. Hour one on deck, or done. Hour two on deck.